Crichton comes in answer to a summons, followed by Traherne.
Crichton, look here.
Silence! Crichton, I want your advice as to what I ought to do with Mr. Ernest. He has defied me.
Pooh!
May I speak openly, my lord?
That is what we desire.
Then I may say, your lordship, that I have been considering Mr. Ernest's case at odd moments ever since we were wrecked.
My case?
Hush!
Since we landed on the island, my lord, it seems to me that Mr. Ernest's epigrams have been particularly brilliant.
Thank you, Crichton.
But I seem to find it growing wild, my lord, in the woods, that sayings which would be justly admired in England are not much use on an island. I would therefore most respectfully propose that henceforth every time Mr. Ernest favors us with an epigram, his head should be immersed in a bucket of cold spring water.
There is a terrible silence.
Serve him right.
I should like to see you try to do it, Uncle.
My feeling, my lord, is that at the next offense I should convey him to a retired spot where I shall carry out the undertaking in as respectful a manner as is consistent with a thorough immersion.
Though his manner is most respectful, he is firm. He evidently means what he says.
Father, you must not permit this. Ernest is your nephew.
Well, after all, he is my nephew, Crichton, and as I am sure he now sees that I am a strong man.
A strong man? You mean a stout man. You are one of mind to two of matter.
Ernest looks round in the old way for approval. No one has smiled. And to his consternation, he sees that Crichton is quietly turning up his sleeves. Ernest makes an appealing gesture to his uncle. Then he turns defiantly to Crichton.
Is it to be before the ladies, Mr. Ernest, or in the privacy of the wood?
Crichton fixes Ernest with his eye. Ernest is cowed.
Come.
No, all right.
Bring the bucket.
Ernest hesitates. He then lifts the bucket and follows Crichton to the nearest spring.
I'm sorry for him, but I had to be firm.
Oh, Father, it wasn't you who was firm. Crichton did it himself.
Bless me, so he did.
Father, be strong.
You can't mean that my faithful Crichton...
Yes, I do.
Lady Mary, I stake my word that Crichton is incapable of acting dishonorably.
I know that. I know it as well as you. Don't you see that that is what makes him so dangerous?
By Jove, I believe I catch your meaning.
He's coming back.
Let us all go into the hut, just to show him at once that it is our hut.
Father, I implore you, assert yourself now and forever.
I will.
And please don't ask him how you are to do it.
Crichton returns with sticks to mend the fire. Lord Loam calls out loftily from the door of the hut.
Have you carried out my instructions, Crichton?
Yes, my lord.
Ernest appears, mopping his hair, which has become very wet since we last saw him. He is not bearing malice. He is too busy drying. But Agatha is specially his champion.
It's infamous! Infamous!
My orders, Agatha.
Now, Father, please.
Before I give you any further orders, Crichton.
Yes, my lord.
Pooh, it's all right.
No, please go on.
Well, well, the question of the leadership. What do you think now, Crichton?
My lord, I feel it is a matter with which I have nothing to do.
Excellent! Ah, Mary, that settles it, I think.
Seems to, but I'm not sure.
It will settle itself naturally, my lord, without any interference from us.
The reference to nature gives general dissatisfaction.
Father!
It settled itself long ago, Crichton, when I was born a peer and you, for instance, were born a servant.
Yes, my lord. That was how it all came about quite naturally in England. We had nothing to do with it there, and we shall have as little to do with it here.
Oh, that's all right.
One moment. In short, Crichton, his lordship will continue to be our natural head.
I dare say, my lady, I dare say.
But you must know.
Asking your pardon, my lady, one can't be sure on an island.
They look at each other uneasily.
Crichton, I don't like this.
The more I think of it, your lordship, the more uneasy I become myself. When I heard, my lord, that you had left that hairpin behind...
One hairpin among so many would only have caused dissension.
No. So, my lord, From that hairpin we could have made a needle. With that needle we could, out of skins, have sewn trousers, of which your lordship is in need. Indeed, we are all in need of them.
All?
On an island, my lady.
Father!
My lady, if nature does not think them necessary, you may be sure she will not ask you to wear them. But among all this undergrowth...
Now you see this man in his true colors.
Crichton, you will either this moment say, down with nature.
My lord.
Then this is my last word to you. Take a month's notice.
If the hut had a door, he would now shut it to indicate that the interview is closed.
Lordship, the disgrace.
Not another word, you may go.
Don't come to me, Crichton, for a character.
Aren't you all forgetting that this is an island?
This brings them to earth with a bump. Lord Loam looks to his eldest daughter for the fitting response.
It makes only this difference, that you may go at once, Crichton, to some other part of the island.
The faithful servant has been true to his superiors ever since he was created, and never more true than at this moment. But his fidelity is founded on trust in nature, and to be untrue to it would be to be untrue to them. He lets the wood he has been gathering slip to the ground and bows his sorrowful head. He turns to obey. Then affection for these great ones wells up in him.
My lady, let me work for you.
Go.
You need me so sorely. I can't desert you. I won't.
Then, father, there is but one alternative. We must leave him.
Lord Loam is looking yearningly at Crichton.
It seems a pity.
Reverend Treherne, you will work for us.
Oh, most willingly, but I must warn you that so far Crichton has done 9/10.
The question is, are we to leave this man?
Come, my dears.
My lord.
Treherne, Ernest, get our things.
We don't have any, uncle. They all belong to Crichton.
Everything we have he brought from the wreck. He went back to it before it sank. He risked his life.
My lord, anything you would care to take is yours.
Nothing?
Rot. If I could have your socks, Crichton.
Come, father, we are ready.
Followed by the others, Merry and Loam pick their way up the rocks. In their indignation, they scarcely notice that daylight is coming to a sudden end.
My lord, I implore you. I am not desirous of being head. Do have a try at it, my lord.
A try at it?
It may be that you will prove to be the best man.
Maybe. My children come.
They disappear proudly in single file.
Crichton, I'm sorry, but of course I must go with them.
Certainly, sir.
Crichton calls to Tweeny, and she comes from behind the hut, where she has been watching breathlessly.
Will you be so kind, sir, as to take her to the others?
Assuredly.
But what do it all mean?
Does, Tweeny, does.
Crichton passes Tweeny up the rocks to Treherne.
We shall meet again soon, Tweeny. Good night, sir.
Good night. I dare say they are not far away.
I went westward, sir. The wind is blowing in that direction. That may mean, sir, that nature is already taking the matter into her own hands. They are all hungry, sir. The pot has come a boil. Smell will be borne westward. That pot is full of nature, Mr. Treherne. Good night, sir.
Good night.
Crichton takes the lid off the pot. Treherne mounts the rocks with Tweeny, and they are heard for a little time after their figures are swallowed up in the fast-growing darkness. Crichton stands motionless, the lid in his hand, though he has forgotten it, and his reason for taking it off the pot. He is deeply stirred, but presently is ashamed of his dejection, for it is as if he doubted his principles. Bravely true to his faith that nature will decide now, as ever before, he proceeds manfully with his preparations for the night. He lights a ship's lantern, one of several treasures he has brought ashore, and is filling his pipe with crumbs of tobacco from various pockets, when the stealthy movements of some animal in the grass startles him. With the lantern in one hand and his cutlass in the other, Crichton searches the ground around the hut. He returns, lights his pipe, and sits down by the fire, which casts weird, moving shadows. There is a red gleam on his face. In the darkness, he is a strong and perhaps rather sinister figure. In the great stillness that has fallen over the land, the wash of the surf seems to have increased in volume. The sound is indescribably mournful. Except where the fire is, desolation has fallen on the island like a pall. Once or twice, as nature dictates, Crichton leans forward to stir the pot, and the smell is borne westward. He then resumes his silent vigil. Shadows other than those cast by the fire begin to descend the rocks. They are the adventurers returning. One by one, they steal nearer to the pot until they are squatted around it with their hands out to the blaze. Only Mary is absent. Presently, she comes within sight of the others, then stands against a tree with her teeth clenched. One wonders, perhaps, what nature is to make of her.